5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Ladies and gentlemen of the AFN, this is the White House in Washington calling. I present the President of the United States.
I appreciate this opportunity to extend my greetings and best wishes to the Convention of the Alaska Federation of Navies. I want you to be among the first to know that I have just signed the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act. This is a milestone in Alaska's history.
The corporate whale, ANCSA, the first 10 years.
The Reverend Mercurlia from St. George Island.
This land of Alaska, which thou gave to our ancestors who had come and gone before us, is now being handed to us a second time by the act of the United States Congress and our untiring efforts. A second chance is given to us by thee to be the new custodians and caretakers.
Under the terms of the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act, ANCSA, the $962.5 million and nearly 44 million acres of land given in exchange for relinquishing Aboriginal land claims were to be distributed to eligible Alaska Natives, shareholders through business corporations. 12 regional profit-making corporations were mandated, arranged roughly along ethnic divisions, with the possibility of a 13th for Alaska Natives living outside the state. In addition, each of the more than 200 villages listed in the bill was required to form either profit or non-profit corporations. All chose the profit option. Inevitably, as with all businesses, some have been more profitable than others. Perhaps most remarkably, all have survived the 10 years since President Richard Nixon signed the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act on December 18, 1971, defeating predictions that some, at least, would soon go bankrupt. Bering Straits Regional Corporation, based in Nome, nearly did in 1978 and continues to flounder. And the 13th Regional Corporation, headquartered in Seattle, Washington, recently discontinued nearly all operations. Debt payments were negotiated in order to avoid closure and attempt a turnaround from 1980 losses exceeding $9 million. But there are successes as well, big ones. Notably, Sea Alaska Corporation in Juneau, the first of the corporations established under ANCSA to make the Fortune 1000. In this program, the fifth in a 10-part series, The Corporate Whale, leaders of Sea Alaska and Cook Inlet Region Incorporated will profile their activities in dividing the benefits of ANCSA into profits for shareholders.
Dividing the mock talk is the way it's always been. Dividing the mock talk between family and friends. We're sailing towards a future who anchored in the past. Rich in our tradition, our way.
The Growth Star was a newcomer, Sea Alaska, number 951, a seafood products concern headquartered in Juneau, Alaska. Its sales soared 684% from $17.6 million in 1979 to $137.9 million last year. For several years, it dabbled cautiously in the transportation.
Fortune magazine, in its annual assessment of the corporate giants of the country, gave that report in the June 15, 1981 issue. Sea Alaska has more shareholders, close to 16,000 Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian Indians, and greater net worth, almost $200 million, than any of the 13 regional native corporations. The corporate office is located in its own high-rise building in the state capital, Juneau. In 1959, the Court of Claims awarded the Tlingit and Haida Indians a cash settlement for lands taken. ANCSA is the second land claim settlement. 12 villages are within the region, which is eligible to receive 280,000 acres of land in southeast Alaska, including timberlands in the Tongass National Forest. Byron Malott, a past president of the Alaska Federation of Natives and former state commissioner of community and regional affairs, is the chairman of the board.
Sea Alaska had standing timber, a valuable asset that could be taken to market very quickly. and having 16,000 shareholders under the formulas of ANCSA, we got the largest chunk of cash. And so Sea Alaska had a real opportunity to marshal and utilize its assets quickly that most other native corporations didn't.
Past president of the Alaska Federation of Natives, current president of the Alaska Native Foundation, and Sea Alaska board member Roger Lang.
We happen to be in fish and timber, and there's no conjecture about timber. Damn things are standing there. You don't have to wonder how many trees you got. You can go out there with a counter and count them, you know. And it's a resource that can be marketed and developed quickly. It's not like oil, gas, or gold, or any of the, either, any of the subsurface minerals. So our resources are visible, easy to get to, and easy to get into business with. Build roads and cut trees.
There are other business operations besides Sea Alaska Timber Corporation and Ocean Beauty Seafoods. Sea Alaska also owns or has interests in Alaska Brick Company, United Bank Alaska, a wholly native-owned bank, Sea Alaska Business Investment Corporation, and a 1% interest in Beaufort Sea oil and gas leases in conjunction with Sohio BP and three other native corporations. But profits aren't the only motives. Roger Lang.
No, there's many more factors entering into what we do than pure profit. If, for instance, Sea Alaska wanted to be purely a profit mode, it would have nothing at all to do with fish, and we got $58 million tied up in that end. It just happens to be something that our people are good at, that our people can work in, and that kind of stuff. That's a large part of what we did.
But as in any corporation, there are disgruntled shareholders who would prefer less altruism and more cash in the form of dividends. Sitka Community Association Executive Director, Shiataka Corporation Director, and Sea Alaska Shareholder Andy Hope III.
They didn't give out any of it out in dividends. You know, I see Cook Inlet made $5.7 million profit last year, and they gave $900,000 of that as dividends. Sea Alaska made 5.9, it gave zilch.
Shareholder Marietta Williams.
These things that they have going like the brick company, and are we really getting things out of this? Are we really going to get something out of those things eventually?
According to Malott, people are getting a great deal now. Sea Alaska's developments tend to impact village lands, and rather than proceed in a manner that may be cost-effective but environmentally destructive, Sea Alaska chooses to spend more money and minimize the negative effects of, say, timber harvesting.
You know, if you're a native corporation, you come down on the side of the native, even if it does impact your bottom line. Sea Alaska is trying to be the kind of business corporation that can be utilized as a tool by our shareholders as Native people. Native people still have not been able to grasp the brass ring of the American merry-go-round. And that's what we're setting out to do.
Close behind Sea Alaska in terms of profitability is the Cook Inlet Region Incorporated. Located in an architecturally commanding building it owns near downtown Anchorage, the state's largest city, SERI, as it's called, has a set of amendments to ANCSA devoted to its particular land needs. Cook Inlet Region Incorporated's 6,300 shareholders are primarily urban residents, though some live in villages and other sites nearby. In 1980, SERI's net worth was a bit over $46 million, and net profits for that year were $5.7 million, up from $3.4 million the year before, a year that corporation led all others created under ANCSA. Roy Hundorf has been president since 1975.
Our geographic area is the south-central part of Alaska. The land entitlement of the region and its villages is approximately 2.3 million acres. We have seven villages, each entitled to some of the surface estate, essentially about a million of the surface acres of the 2.3 million acres are part of the village entitlement.
Only 1,500 of Ceres shareholders live in villages and are enrolled in village corporations. The rest are so-called at-large and receive payments from the settlement directly rather than having them diverted to village corporations. Ceres shareholders, being primarily urban, are also less inclined to urge corporate leadership to get involved in the subsistence issue or feel as strongly about the balance between resource development on corporate lands versus its impact on traditional lifestyle.
We're going to be careful, and we're worried about how their land is used, but we have slightly different priorities. For example, it's quite likely that Siri might develop a mineral resource on its land before another region might develop a mineral resource on village land in rural Alaska. And this is because the village will no doubt be consulted, and they may have some objections to bringing development into their subsistence area. Here we don't see much of that kind of a conflict.
A large measure of Cook Inlet's conflicts have centered on the land, on getting the ANCSA entitlement.
In our case, unlike other regional corporations, much of the land that was prescribed for the villages and the region had already been patented to the state and was therefore not available for selection by us. So therefore, we were thrown into this category of discretion that the secretary had, and he would, as the act requires, withdraw land of similar kind and character from which we would select our entitlement. And then, of course, we disagreed with how he exercised that discretion. We ultimately went to court, and we settled out of court by engaging in a three-way land exchange, the state, the federal government, and Siri in 1976. It was challenged in court subsequently. It cleared the courts in late 1978, and we have been in the process of implementing the exchange since then.
Instead of the unacceptable, inaccessible mountaintops and glaciers, Siri Holdings now includes surplus federal property in the southeast and in the interior, subsurface lands in the Kenai Moose Range with good coal, oil and gas potential, and the Beluga coal fields.
Siri is primarily a natural resource company, that is, an energy and minerals company. We have broadened that definition of the corporation's business somewhat by adding that we are in the business of energy and minerals and service industries that are attendant to the development of these resources, such as oil and gas drilling, engineering and design of remote energy-related facilities. We've recently become involved in specialized pipeline construction, plus resource development, are our main areas of interest. Additionally, the fourth area is naturally real estate. We have some commercial real estate, and that is a part of our portfolio. But of course, the real profit, the real cash flow from mineral development will come if development of a mine occurs and you begin to get production payments, or development continues and expands in oil and gas, in the area of oil and gas and coal.
Next year, Roy Hundorf expects Cook Inlet Region Incorporated's profits to top $10 million, and shareholders can anticipate dividends.
I think this is the end result of those early decisions. There's been a number of correct decisions made by people at Siri since the act passed in 1971, and a lot of luck rolled into it. We're located right in South Central Alaska, where the majority of the people live and therefore the bulk of the economy is, and we should be expected to do better than the average corporation, I suppose.
You've been listening to The Corporate Whale, ANCSA, the first 10 years, the fifth program in a 10-part series written and produced by Karen Michelle McPherson with technical assistance from Phil Falkowski. Funding was provided by KUAC sponsors and the Alaska Native Human Resources Development Program of the Cooperative Extension Service of the University of Alaska. Special thanks to David Harding, John Neustrom and Kathy Cody of KCAW, Patty Ginsburg of KTOO, and musicians Herbie Vent, Buddy Tabor, the Gajaheen Dancers, and Will Ackerman. Cassette copies of this program are available for $5 from Educational Media Services, Starroot Box 20155, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99701.